Radio City, John Grayson, Rob Ross with you at it back again. And here we are, Rob. How's everything going in New York other than just street meltingly hot?
It has been a very odd week. We had the primary elections last week, in which I'm very, very relieved to say that Michael Grimm was roundly trounced.
Ah, yes, the felon candidate.
Donovan, thankfully. So we shall see a campaign of Donovan versus this, I think he calls himself a Democrat, but being another crony of Bernie Sanders, this fellow named Max Rose.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully people of Staten Island aren't stupid enough to go and vote for somebody like this.
Well, you know, on that subject, because right now the entire left is just exulting over the fact that Ocasio-Cortez won, and nobody knows anything about her. You're rolling your eyes already, so hit it. Who is she? What is the real story with this woman?
First of all, she concocted a story that, oh, you know, she comes from this poor family, blah, blah, blah. No, she comes from a very nice middle-class neighborhood, for a start.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, she reamed out the reporter, albeit a right-leaning reporter, for outing her, so to speak. But she's already gone right into my doghouse from the moment that she opened her mouth, because she's an anti-Semite. Not just anti-Israel, she's an anti-Semite.
Really?
So she's already gone out of her way to offend whatever Jews there might be who would have been stupid enough to vote for her. And she's, by the way, a, quote, democratic socialist.
Right.
That's an oxymoron. There's no such thing as democratic socialists. You're either a Democrat or you're a socialist, a.k.a. a communist. That's all there is to it. This is very black and white, folks. We're not dumb people. And I'm not going to, you know, I would like to grace you as the audience with that intelligence of not talking down to you with the whole notion of democratic socialism. That's a misnomer. And she's just one of these, you know, patting herself on the back, just shooting her mouth off. You know, she's already taken to championing this fellow who's running for governor under the Justice Democratic ticket in Michigan. Let's remember, she got a nomination. She didn't win the election.
Right, and that's an important distinction to make. So when it comes to election time, what are her chances? Is she in a district that's only ever going to elect a Democrat?
Probably, but here's the key thing. She's one person in a two-year seat.
Right.
And if you saw her platform, you know damned well it's all smoke and mirrors and that she's not going to deliver on any of it. And I do mean any of it. If you want to talk about being lofty beyond words, boy, this is delusion at its worst. But there you go. This is another one of these Bernie Sanders cronies. And I have to admit, I am taking great glee at watching the left tearing itself apart.
Right.
Because the Democrats made the mistake of letting these people in the door. They've infected the party. And now you can't get them out without fighting back. But they, you know, the Democrats have shown no balls, for lack of a better phrase, and they've let these people in to infiltrate and cause more problems. And at the same time, these communists are still going on about, well, Hillary was a lousy candidate and Bernie was, you know, was a conspiracy against Bernie. It was 2 years ago. Enough already. I don't hear Hillary Clinton moaning about it.
Right, not anymore anyway. What the left is doing again, and we've seen this over and over and over again, is they're missing the point. They miss the point all the time, and they're missing the point on this as well, because they saw the election of Donald Trump, and they've seen what's happened since then. And what they seem to have taken that to mean is, oh, people like assholes. Great, let's go find some assholes. And, you know, let's go as far to the left as the Republicans have gone to the right, and we'll just have our assholes fight it out with their assholes. No, no. Republicans like assholes. Democrats only like you when you're relatively cool. And if you keep going off the deep end like this, you're going to lose them.
And the thing is, you've got more and more of these far left, alt left assholes.
Right.
Like Susan Sarandon, like Mark Ruffalo, like Rosario Dawson, all sticking themselves out there in the front of the cameras to get arrested so they can do their usual shtick. And you know what? It's having the adverse domino effect.
Right. Yeah, if you really want legislative change, and in the face of an open seat on the Supreme Court, you better want legislative change. You have to knock this idiocy off.
But they're not going to.
Nope, of course not.
They're hitting the Democrats harder because they want the Democrats to completely kowtow to what they demand. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
Your sense of entitlement is making you trip over, as you always put it, your own dick.
Yes, and it will continue to do so because, again, they show no signs of waking up from this fugue that they seem to be in. So while all of that's going on, I mean, there are some things that have happened in the political world. And speaking of being an asshole, by the way, we have to talk about what happened last week in Maryland, because the shootings of those reporters, and it wasn't just reporters, it was one of the people who was shot and killed was just a member of the office staff. I say just as in meaning this wasn't targeted to, you know, to reporters. It was anybody who happened to be in this guy's way. And it was kind of funny in an ironic way, to see what happened right after that shooting, because again, people started missing the point. And in a time when the first reaction is to reach for somebody I can blame for this, who I already hate anyway, they did it again. And they said, oh, well, there's this guy, Milo Yiannopoulos. And if you know who he is, political gadfly, meaningless is who he is. And right before this happened, he said that there should be some kind of war on reporters or something like that, or the death squads should come in. And as it turns out, everybody on the left grabbed that picture of this guy and went, oh, look, see how terrible they are. Now they're killing journalists. And it turns out that the guy who did it had a grudge against this particular paper. Yes. Over a story they read. It had nothing to do with Yiannopoulos.
Hey, before we forget, he also had a beef with another newspaper in Virginia as well.
Right.
So this wasn't an unplanned incident. It wasn't just this spur of the moment. I was inspired by Milo Yiannopoulos.
It never is.
I mean, first of all, if you do know who Milo Yiannopoulos is, he's the political version of Perez Hilton.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it at that.
Uh-huh.
Perez Hilton is, it's the same exact, they're cut from the same cloth.
I don't think he's gay. I think he's a phony. I think he made the whole shtick up.
Asshole. He tries to sound like he's smart.
Yeah.
But he comes off like a dumbass.
Oh, he is. Yeah. But I do. I think the whole thing's an act, and he's just a phony. And so that's all anybody really needs to know about him. But, the shooting itself, it does show once again that we have the same problems we've always had. And, you know, while here, you know, the rational people are looking at this and going, it has nothing to do with some idiot and the words that he spouted on Twitter. What happens right afterwards? Well, we found out today that the owners of the newspaper had gone to the White House. Not gone to, but they had contacted the White House and asked about having the flags lowered to half staff following this mass shooting, as was done after the mass shooting in Parkland, and as was done after the mass shooting that happened in Southern California at the school there. The White House said no. While, again, the rational people are saying this wasn't a targeted attack on journalists because Donald Trump hates the media, what does Donald Trump do? Turns around and says, nah, I'm not going to lower the flags. Fuck them.
I think you can leave that on its own two legs and let it stand as is. What more can we say to dissect it?
Yeah, know? Nothing.
Because you know what that does? That, in turn, makes us become like the assholes on the far left. We start nitpicking every little thing for meaning where there is none.
Right.
It's an obvious statement made by the White House. Let them deal with the ramifications like everything else.
Right. And of course, what do? They dodge. And the White House sends out no official comment when one is requested. And when somebody asks Sarah Sanders about it, she says, I haven't talked to the president about that. Story over.
But meanwhile, in Germany, Angela Merkel has very surprisingly done an about-face and now is tightening up their immigration policies.
No kidding.
No kidding. This was breaking news about 45 minutes ago in the New York Times, to prevent, quote-unquote, a collapse of her government.
Right. Which means
she's following in the steps now of Italy and countries that have realized we have a problem. And it's now gotten so out of control, we have no other recourse.
Right. Because there is such a thing as too many people in one place at one time. And you can't manage. I mean, when you have a system that's working and all of a sudden you add in hundreds of thousands of people who have never been in that system before, it's going to cause some problems.
Especially when it's a system that they want to change.
Yep.
And in a not civilized fashion.
Right.
So There you go. You know, I'm sure Donald Trump is sitting there smiling, saying to himself, told you so.
Yeah. And
because he sent out a bunch of letters to various members of NATO saying, enough is enough. You need to start tightening up on security. On that, I can't disagree with him.
No.
That's what I hate. It's like, I hate the fact that there are things that he says, albeit he could do it in a lot more of a deft and diplomatic manner, but he's Donald Trump. He's an illiterate.
Yep.
But I hate the fact that I agree with him on certain factors.
A stop clock is right twice a day.
Right.
So sooner or later. Right. Nobody can stop him from talking. And if you say enough words, you'll eventually be right about something. But, you know, we're coming into a time now, and we'll talk about the Supreme Court justice thing in a minute. But we get the 4th of July coming up. And this is a time when we all, even those of us who are total cynics to our very core, look around and you see all those American flags and the fireworks going off and everything else, and you start to feel it. So I am curious what your plans are for the big day.
Simple. I'm making America great again.
Attaboy. So you are finally taking over. Good man.
I told you. I am, you know, my darling bride actually doesn't think that malevolent dictator is good enough as my title, because, you know, I want to eschew being called president for life.
Sure.
God Emperor is her choice.
Oh, nice. It's got a ring to it.
I like that. You know, I mean, instead of having an inauguration or an investiture, I would have, a beatification, really, because I would be a deity. Thus, God Emperor works.
I'm already beatiful. Don't hate me because I'm beatiful.
Oh, listen, I'm letting you slide for your transgressions these last few weeks with not only being getting all British at points, but getting Canadian. I mean, it's, you know.
Sometimes it just can't be helped. But
yeah, it can be. It's called medication.
Yeah, well, we have no plans, though. And that's a weird thing about this 4th of July is because it falls on a Wednesday.
Yeah,
It's nice to have a day off, but still.
I completely agree with you about the whole, you know, you see the flags and you see the banners and there's always a nice parade on the other side of Staten Island. And since we live right by the harbor and we live on a hill, we usually just go up to the roof and watch the fireworks from all around the area because it's such a panoramic scene.
Right.
That you can look out over the East River and you can see the Macy's display that they have every year. You can look out over Jersey, over the Hudson, and you turn around right behind you, and there's things that are going on all over Staten Island. It's fantastic. And the fact is, I am and will always remain a patriot. I will always be a very proud American. You know, I'm a real American. I fight for the rights of every man. But, you know, and don't forget, I make sure that everybody does their demandments every day. Say your prayers, take your vitamins, and always follow the rules of Hulkamania, brother.
That's right. Stay in your homes.
The thing is that I find myself chafing in a way that I never was angered before by all of these righteous, smug pricks who say, well, I don't feel patriotic, so fuck the 4th of July. No, fuck you. See, you're an American. You have the privilege of being here, you know? Revel in it. Be proud of that.
Right.
Because what we should all be doing is voicing our concerns in a rational manner, acting upon those concerns in a rational manner, i.e. vote.
Oh, you mean not just post something on Facebook?
Right.
This accomplishes a lot, you know.
Well, that's really a snipe at the young people, you know, the ever-loving millennials who love to bitch about stuff but don't want to do a goddamn thing.
Yeah, because you used the word act a minute ago, and that's the point, is you have to actually act. You have to do something. And if you don't, and you just sit around and whine about it, you can sit around and whine anywhere.
You know, I love the 4th of July. Plus, 1776 is always on, and that is just some damn fine viewing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is indeed. So, yeah, looking forward to the holiday. There is a little town, and I live in a little town, but there's a little town next to us that's even smaller, and they usually put on the local fireworks display, but lately they've been going with Saturdays, so we may already have missed it. I'm going to have to check, but if they are doing fireworks Wednesday night, we'll drive down.
Which is nice. It's something that gives you a sense of community.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is that's something that's very important to me because in Staten Island, we're still a community. you know? And that's why I appreciate, you know, my neighbors and the people around me. You know, they all take part in it.
Right.
And we haven't been tainted by the other assholes of New York.
How does New York deal with fireworks, New York City? Can you have them?
They're illegal. They are
illegal. Totally. Yeah. Okay, done.
Yeah. Yep. What everybody always does is they all drive down to Virginia and they buy them there and they bring them back.
Yep.
And or they go to Chinatown because there always seems to be a great cachet of fireworks available in Chinatown. But nevertheless, you know, there are a bunch of legal displays that are put on, but no, they're totally illegal. Yes. Hell, I grew up with illegal fireworks every year.
Right. Well, and here it goes back and forth. It depends on what part of town you live in. And I was thinking about it the other day because when I was a kid living after we moved out of New York and moved to Florida, the deal in Florida statewide is you can't have anything that explodes or shoots up in the air, but you can have all the sparklers and whatever you want. Just as long as it doesn't shoot up in the air or explode. So
hang on a second. You can have a gun in Florida.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
You can have all the guns you want. I think they hand them out at the border.
Right. Well, it's Florida.
Right. But yeah, as far as fireworks go, they have all kinds of restrictions. But the thing is, I started to see these tents pop up all over the place selling fireworks, and they were selling everything, bottle rockets and, you know, firecrackers and M80s and all this stuff. And I went in to investigate and found out that they had this form, and there were three reasons why there were three exceptions in the law. So it's like you can't have fireworks that do this or shoot up in the air or explode unless you are using them to signal trains. You're using them to scare birds away from your crops. And there was one other one, and I can't remember what it was. So the deal was they printed a form out of the exceptions and had you check which one you were covered under. Nobody ever checked. And then you just signed it and handed it to the guy. So he was covered. His liability was gone. And then you could buy whatever you want.
Interesting.
I want to know.
Isn't Florida the place where you should always take your dead bodies?
Yes, or your nearly dead bodies, because every, you know, there's a law that says if you're 90 plus, you have to live in Florida.
No.
specifically St. Petersburg, Florida. Hey, I don't make the rules. I just report them to you.
Well, next time do some fact checking, will you?
I will do my level best. But now there's a lot going on in the sports world. How much World Cup are you watching?
None.
Really? None at all?
I find it absolutely boring. The United States isn't in it. I don't care.
Yeah.
England got ousted. While I've got no great love of England, that's the only other team that I would pay any attention to.
Sure.
Not interested. This has got to be the most randomly odd World Cup. Who's in this now?
Yeah.
Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia and like, you know, Ipswich Down and you know, Frankenfurter. What the hell is going on with the World Cup?
I think the Republic of Fredonia right now is favored to win the entire thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? Let them all go to hell except Cave 76.
Exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. I haven't been watching too much of it either. I caught probably an hour or two. And like you, I'm just looking for somebody that I can root for. I'm looking for a decent story, and there just doesn't seem to be one.
It's totally anticlimactic. But before we get to the big sports news, because there's some very big sports
news. Yes, there is.
One of the sadder aspects is New York Mets general manager Sandy Alderson very suddenly resigned from his position last week because he's battling cancer again for the second time. Mm. And, you know, at the age of 75, even though the guy doesn't look a day over 57.
No, yeah, you're right.
He's been through it before, but usually when it comes back, that's never a good sign. So all I can do is hope and pray and wish the best for Sandy. This is, you know, what's gone on with the Mets this year has not helped things any, I'm sure. But all that matters is that he hopefully gets well and can beat this again.
No doubt about it. So, yeah, all the best to the now former Mets general manager. So we'll be watching that one. Thank you for the update on that. There's also, as you said, there's all kinds of news going on. We're now
major news. Yeah, major news.
We're now into the point of the NHL season where all of the trading is happening. It's all going crazy, and we'll get into some of the big blockbuster deals. But there's some stuff specific to New York going on. What's happening?
Well, the biggest prize in the sport that was available as an unrestricted free agent, John Tavares of the New York Islanders, up and signed with his hometown Toronto Maple Leafs yesterday for a 7-year, $11 million a year deal with a full no trade clause. Now, the Islanders had, in fact, last week, and everybody was reporting that he was on the verge of signing an 8-year deal for more money, but the 11th hour came and the Maple Leafs came in with this, and he decided he just wanted to go home instead.
Yeah.
And the way he announced it was on Twitter, his Twitter feed, where he put a childhood picture of himself in his Maple Leafs gear sleeping.
Yeah, right.
And then he wrote his farewell to the New York Islanders, which is kind of an interesting twist on the fact that they had just brought in Lou Lamoriello to become general manager and head of hockey operations. They brought in Barry Trotz, who just won the Stanley Cup with the Washington Capitals, to be the head coach. They got a commitment on a new arena that'll be ready in another, at this point, 4 years. But all of this is to say that I don't, you know, I'm a New York Rangers fan. I don't have any beefs with the Islanders, and I feel for the Islanders fans, but most of the ones that I've spoken to all feel the same way about it. If it wasn't going to be the Islanders, he went home. He did this as a choice of going to play for his hometown team.
Right.
It's the proverbial dream come true. So you know what? Good luck to him. Do I think that the Maple Leafs are now Stanley Cup bound with him on the team? The answer is absolutely not yet. It may take another 2 to 3 years. But at the same time, I hate to say it, when it comes to hockey, more often than not, big name free agent signings never seem to work out.
Right. And yeah, the less of a star skill position kind of guy you're talking about, the better the chances are of that happening. It's like, you know, free agent deals, you take the NFL, for example, free agent deals that involve linemen usually work out fairly well. Free agent deals that involve skill players have bombed so many times, it's not even funny. And the NHL is very much akin to that. But the other blockbuster deal in hockey happened with my team, the Buffalo Sabres, who traded away Ryan O'Reilly for a couple of players from the St. Louis Blues and I guess a couple of draft picks from them as well. And O'Reilly, well, I'll tell you what, let's start with Buffalo's side of this deal first, because when you have all of the, I mean, there were a bunch of players that were either salary cap dump candidates or free agents off of the St. Louis Blues team. So what the Sabres end up with is Patrick Berglund and Vladimir Sobotka. So you trade away a centerman for a couple of decent offensive players. And they also get, as I said, a couple of draft picks. But Ryan O'Reilly was the league leader in faceoff wins last year. He was the lead league leader, I think, in power play goals, or he was right up there in the top four or five. And, you know, as a top offensive talent, but the book on him, from what I've been talking to my friends back in Buffalo, was that he was no good in the locker room. He was locker room poison. And I don't know what the issue was or with whom it was, but apparently he just was not well-liked inside that Sabres locker room.
That will get you traded faster than anything, and it doesn't matter how good you are of a player.
Yep.
I'm sorry. That seems to be – it is an interesting push in hockey. Whenever there's a locker room cancer, they get rid of them right away. And it doesn't matter if you're the captain of the team. You know, if you're a pain in the ass, you're going to go
right
before anybody else can even blink an eye. That happened with the New York Rangers in the trade that sent JT Miller and Ryan McDonagh down to Tampa Bay, which – ironically, this weekend, and you and I talked about this briefly before we started the show tonight, I feel that Tampa Bay has made major steps backwards during this offseason, because they, in fact, re-signed both McDonagh and Miller to long-term contracts while they're still handcuffed to Ryan Callahan's contract. That albatross has not paid one single dividend because Callahan is still hurt
right.
and unable to play hockey. You're going perilously close to being capped. You can't go any further. You can't do anything to help the team. And I think it showed in the playoffs that Tampa Bay has probably got their window just about closed now. The same way that, that Nashville's window closed. Now, speaking of Nashville, their former captain, James Neal, who had played this magnificent season with the Vegas Golden Knights, signed a 5-year deal with the Calgary Flames, which is an oddly interesting deal because it just says to me that was a money deal.
Yeah.
First bid in, and that was it. He took it rather than wait to see who might come making offers. The thing is, Neal is 30 years old. So 30 to 35, I am always a little bit more doubtful once they've surpassed the age of 30. Mm-hmm. See, John Tavares is only 27. So, yeah, it's a 7-year deal, but he's still in his 20s.
Right.
And he's still got the wheels, and he's also not been hurt. So that's another big plus. But now the trades are starting to happen. Interestingly, the Rangers have stood pat thus far. No major deals, no nothing. You know, they re-signed one of the kids they got back from Tampa Bay, Mesnikov. But that's about it. It's, you know, it remains to be seen. Now, going over to a sport that I really don't have any care for, but come on, it's the biggest news there is out there.
Yes, it is.
LeBron James up and left the Cleveland Cavaliers for the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, unlike when he left Cleveland the first time to go to the Miami Heat, there wasn't the obnoxious fanfare that followed.
Right.
That appalling, you know, announcement that was broadcast on ESPN that he was going to sign with Miami.
Yeah.
This very simple statement from his agency saying that he had accepted a 4-year deal with the LA Lakers. Now, here's the thing.
$38 million a year.
If you watched the playoffs, unfortunately, LeBron carried that team into the finals.
Yep.
By single-handedly beating Boston. You can't make lightning strike twice. Not like that. His team never showed up around him. You and I have talked about this. They failed him miserably.
Sure.
He's 34, and it didn't seem like they were going to make any moves to supplant what wasn't working and get the right players that would work. He's 34 years old. His window has definitely started to close rapidly. This is going to be his last run. I don't see him playing much more past this contract. I don't see him making a return to Cleveland for one last rally to bring them another championship. You know, the thing is, LeBron James is a very good player. He's a very nice guy from all reports. Very likable, very affable kind of guy. But he's not Michael Jordan. And people have said for years and made the comparisons. And it's enough is enough, folks. Jordan's got how many rings? LeBron has what, 3?
Yeah.
Right. That's it.
And it's not even so much a matter of the championships. I mean, that's what's always going to be first in the...
Jordan was of a time.
Right. And he's also a very different kind of player. You know, he approached the game differently than LeBron does.
Right, and it's also a very different league now, too.
Right.
You know, at this stage, all I can say is the Lakers, I don't know if LeBron was doing it just for the money or because he sees a career. Because he's got the charisma, he could stay in Hollywood, you know. but the Lakers are nowhere near any kind of playoff. They might be able to scrape into a playoff, maybe. But they're nowhere near anything that's called contending.
I wonder if you can explain something to me. Because the way that you put that reminded me of something. And I don't think this is what you meant. But when you said, you know, I don't know if he's doing it just for the money. Why does that piss fans off?
Because of the whole dog and pony show that a lot of, and I'm not saying all, but a lot of athletes will do about the hometown team, you know. LeBron's from Cleveland, and he wanted to finish his career in Cleveland, and, you know, he came back from Miami, and, you know, all was forgiven, and he brought them a championship. But if it was just for the money, yeah, I'm sure it's going to piss the fans off. I don't care.
But, yeah, right. Know. It's so dumb, and I never understood it. When Albert Pujols left here, when he left the St. Louis Cardinals to go to California play for the Angels, that was the most common knock and the vitriol. I mean, this town still is not real happy about that. And that was, what, 10 years ago? So it's, you know, it's been a little while.
10 years, how many World Series have the Cardinals won?
I think 2.
Right. How many have the Angels won?
None.
End of story.
Right. And so in that time, yeah, I mean, it didn't end up being the deal that he thought it was going to be in California. But the thing is, you know, with everybody here who was so mad and just ready to hang this guy. I mean, there was a restaurant here called Pujols 5, and it had to change its name after he left. So, you know, they had to go get a different sponsorship or whatever, or naming rights. But the thing is, that was the knock is, oh, he's only doing it for the money. Of course he is. It's his job. That's what he does for a living. Of course he's doing it for the money. I never understood people getting all upset about that.
But I'm sure Pujols didn't go on and on and you know, do their whole thing about, you know, the hometown team and all. You know, LeBron is from the area.
Right.
He made big fuss about it, made a point of, you know, I want to finish my career in Cleveland. Well, obviously you don't. So, you know, I think that might be the one factor as to why it would piss people off.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I hear it brought up so often, and I think, yeah, I would do it for the money, and so would you, and so did he. So what?
If I was, you know, playing for the Mets or the Rangers, and, you know, I had a great career with either team, but I was at my stage of free agency, and with the exception of the Yankees.
Yeah, right.
Or the Canadiens.
I know Hal Steinbrenner. You don't want to work for that guy.
You give me the money, and I'm going to show up in that uniform. But see, here's the thing, John. You and I aren't full of shit. You know, if you ask us, you know, if I got a huge contract from, ooh, it kills me to say this, like MCA Records, right?
Yeah.
And wanted me to put out pop shit instead of the stuff that I want to do, do you think I'm going to thumb my nose at it?
No. You do that stuff. You make the money. When you have the money, you start your own record label and put out whatever you want.
Right. First you get the guns. Then you get the drugs, then you get the cocaine. Know what I'm saying?
Jello. Right, and then the money follows. It's all a big circle.
Right. But that's all. But again, that's because you and, well, first of all, we're adults. Second of all, and when I say adults, that's the nice way of saying we're smart for our years. We are learned people. We've seen this kind of nonsense ad infinitum. You know, people still want to have their heroes and hold them in high esteem and blah, blah, blah. And so they'll take offense when that hero decides, especially in sports, that that hero is going to go where the money is. Pure and simple.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's called commerce in the modern world.
Yeah, exactly. We invented it to be this way. Don't get on them. I think what I just said is don't hate the player. Oh, whatever the fuck that saying is.
Don't hate the player.
Yeah, right. Period. Yeah, hate
Full
the game.
Stop. That's it right there. Now, one last thing that has to do with sports is that Disney is purchasing Fox, apparently.
Yeah, right. Not Fox News, though. Fox Network.
No. Right. So now Fox will have to sell off 22 of their regional sports networks.
Right.
Which I don't think affects New York at all, because I think the only FS1 and FS2 are basically soccer oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they occasionally show a baseball game, but that's it.
Yeah, Fox Sports Midwest does carry the Blues games, so something will happen there.
Yeah, I mean, here, you know, the Rangers are on the Madison Square Garden network. Actually, all three teams are. Technically, even Buffalo is, because they're on MSG in Buffalo.
Right.
So, we don't have anything to worry about. And the Mets are on SNY, and I couldn't care less about the Yankees. So, you know.
Yeah. And they'll probably end up selling them off to Sinclair or somebody like that, somebody who owns some TV and a lot of radio.
Probably. Funny, every time I hear the word Sinclair, all I think about is, you know, dino fuel gasoline. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Joel Sinclair at his famous gas stations.
That's right. That's all I think about. So, you know.
We actually still had a Sinclair station up until about 3 years ago.
They're out there in the Midwest.
Yep.
They still exist.
Yep.
The one I'd like to see come back, of course, is Flying A. Flying A and Sinclair are the two of my youth. Now, this is something we've never brought up. That's been one of my hobbies since childhood.
Uh-huh.
Is Petroliata.
No kidding.
Yeah, seriously. Dyed-in-the-wool collector, fan of, you know, old gas stations and stuff like that. In fact, when I was in Cocoa Beach the last time, in the town of Cocoa, instead, just outside of Cocoa Beach, there was a shop called, I'm not kidding, past gas. And it was the kind of place where you died and went to petroleum heaven. They even had, it was fantastic, an old Sinclair pump.
Yeah.
The old Tolkien pumps that was turned into a fridge when you pulled the handle in the front.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was great. I bought so much stuff there, it wasn't even funny. I used to have a flying A clock. I still have all my gas station stuff as my refrigerator magnets.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of the pump signs. I collected a whole bunch of them. I have a Sinclair one. I have an old Gulf one, old Texaco.
Gulf. Oh God, how long has it been since you've seen a Gulf sign?
I'll give you a good one. Esso, before they changed the name to Exxon.
Right, and Esso is still the name in Canada.
Right. But here it was Esso, NK, NJ, and Enco.
And then there was the Atlantic Richfield Company, who gave us the Arco stations, right?
And then BP came along and bought up Atlantic Richfield and Sinclair and merged them all under the BP shield in 1969. Thus, they all disappeared from the East Coast. I think Arco barely exists now. Hey, Amoco no longer exists.
Yeah,
American. Sohio and Boron no longer exist.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another conversation but because this is, July 4th, and we're talking about things that are purely American.
Yeah, exactly. Boy, do we love our gas stations. And, even who would have guessed that of all of the brands that were, at one point, like Gulf, under that same logo, because you could always go by the colors. There were the orange and blue stations. There were the red, white, and blue stations. That was the old Standard Oil Trust. And, yeah. The ones that were Phillips 66 and all of the ones that, were under that same sort of logo. And Phillips 66 is one of the ones that it's not only still around, but seems to be thriving. I see that logo all over the place.
There are actually Phillips 66 stations now in New Jersey. That's how far north they are.
There you go.
At least you can see them in the south. Union 76 seems to have, UNOCAL seems to have fallen by the wayside, unfortunately.
Yep.
A lot of them were, quote, rebranded.
Sunoco is another one that was only ever in the Northeast. I still don't see those anywhere, but when I go back home.
That was two brands.
Yeah.
That was under the Sun Oil Company name. But, in the New York area, it was always the same thing. It was always Texaco, Shell, Esso, Sinclair, Flying A, because Tidewater Oil Company of New York.
Yep.
That was Flying A's brand. Flying A was bought out by Getty. Getty no longer exists. They were bought out by Texaco, who no longer exists because they were bought out by Phillips. So,
Now I know how people feel when I start talking about tequila. It's like, wow, you really know your shit. And then at some point it gets to that, how do you know that shit? And yeah, it's too much, man.
It's a childhood obsession.
It's great.
It started with, according to my parents, and they used to have old Super 8 home movies. There was like a whole cluster of gas stations, like five of them, on like five different corners in this kind of traffic circle that was in Brooklyn near our apartment.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, I was always thrilled with it. And then my parents got me a little Sinclair transistor radio, which I still have,
yeah,
by the way. And that really got it kicked off. And then when I started collecting Matchbox and Hot Wheels, you'd always get the little tanker trucks. Hey, listen, what did every boy want for Christmas, amongst everything else? For a Hess oil truck every year.
Oh, yeah.
Guess what? Hess no longer exists.
Right.
They sold out to a company called Speedway. So. You can only get your Hess truck online now.
Well, at least they still make them online, and they still will as long as the collectors are out there.
Now, speaking of things that you can only get online and the death of a tradition, this was the weekend that Toys R Us closed for the very last time.
Yeah, and I wrestled with whether to go or not, and I decided not.
Most people that went said the exact same thing. There's nothing there except, not furnishings. What's the word?
Oh, yeah, they're like the shelves and stuff.
Yeah, that was all that was left. And there was a very sad little placard that somebody had painted that said, I guess all the kids have grown up because there are no more Toys R Us kids.
Yeah. Ugh.
And it was, Jeffrey the Giraffe. And it was just really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But That's a side of America that we really would rather not see. You know, another tradition gone down the drain.
Right.
I think part of my big problem with everyone and everything at the moment is the fact that it seems to be very in vogue right now to shit all over tradition, whatever that tradition may be. And I find it to be reprehensible. It just shows a complete lack of respect and a lack of a moral compass.
Yeah. You know, you put it in those words, not having any idea that I was about to go here, but over the weekend, my lovely bride and I were looking for something to do. And this is going to get really dark and sad in a minute. But what we did is we went out and saw the Mr. Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor? And it was fantastic. It really, I mean, I'm not that much of a documentary film guy. I see a few, but it was just outstanding. And if you thought before, wow, Mr. Rogers was pretty cool, and in a, you know, weird, dorky sort of way, and he said things on TV to kids that nobody ever thought kids could handle, and he was able to do it because he was just, he was the right guy. He was the right boring guy to come along at exactly the right time and show everybody how to do everything in a sort of non-threatening manner. Watch this movie, and those feelings will increase tenfold. He was just an incredible person.
The thing about Mr. Rogers is he was the first one to talk to kids like they were people.
Right.
You know, he didn't talk down to them. Much in the same way that when Schoolhouse Rock came along, it wasn't to talk down to, it was to inform, educate, and at the same time entertain, because you're going to retain the things you hear.
Right. Right. And, you know, they talked about and showed some of the footage. And I was not aware this happened until seeing the movie, because I wasn't around yet. But after Bobby Kennedy's assassination in 1968, there was an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which was in its first season at that point, and Daniel the Tiger, voiced by Fred Rogers, was asking the woman who was on the show with him what assassination was. And it's like, this is a little kid's show, and you've got a puppet asking a human woman what an assassination is. And she explained it, and what he said when he was interviewed about it was, look, these little kids were hearing their parents say that word in a conversation where everybody was stressed and everybody was upset and everybody was sad, and the kids have no idea why, and all they can blame it on is assassination, and if they don't know what that is, it's going to be a hell of a lot scarier than it would be if we tell them.
Perfectly said. But, you know, you saw the documentary, you know the kind of demeanor that and timber of Fred Rogers' nature.
Right.
And he was, you know, he was a good man. He did a great job. He's a saint to many of us.
Yeah.
You know, when I watched the show when it first came on for about, what, 2, maybe 3 years? I mean, I was, what, 3 years old when it first came on. I remember it was on the old NET, and before it was called PBS. And out of all of those shows that was on public television at the time for children, that was the only one that I would watch with regularity.
Yeah.
Sesame Street came along a year later, and I just didn't like it. There was something about it that just always rubbed me the wrong way.
maybe for me it's because it was always around, because I loved it.
Because it was probably because it was like too much of hippies.
Yeah.
It just seemed too groovy for its own good.
Right.
You know? Never watched The Electric Company, never watched Zoom. None of that was my bag. I was already, you know, by 5, I was already, you know, watching Saturday. I was just firmly immersed in Saturday morning cartoons and, of course, Warner Brothers. That was it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I warned you this is going to get really dark, and it will. So we saw the movie, and I actually posted something on Facebook about this as well, and it was a good thing that it was a kind of a tearjerker of a movie anyway, because I was in that sort of mood. We've talked about a couple of high-profile suicides here on the show just recently. Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade. And they happened back-to-back like that. And, you know, it's one thing when you're talking about things like that at arm's length, when it's about people that you may know a lot about, but you don't really know them. You don't really know who they are. And there was a guy that I worked with when I was in Nashville and ended up being one of my best friends in the business ever. And he and I would still, I mean, we hadn't seen each other, I think, in person in probably about 10 years. But we would talk every month or so, at least, on the phone. So we always knew what was going on with each other's careers and all of that. And we would catch up and actually talk. And I saw what he was doing. He ended up a disc jockey in Charleston, South Carolina. And ended up the morning guy on a station there and owned the market. I mean, just owned it. And I always knew that he had the talent, that he was funny, and naturally so. He was one of those people that you end up in a conversation with, and 5 minutes in, you're laughing your ass off. And so I knew he was going to go far, and he did, and started this music scene, or just a sort of a recognition on the radio of the music scene that was already extant in Charleston at the time, and so made friends with all these bands and had these concerts that concert series that had his name on it and all of this stuff, and everybody loved him. And 6 months ago, he left the radio show because of all the consolidation that's been going on, and whether he was ousted, told to leave or whatever. I mean, it was a little bit of both, and he had been kind of antsy about it for a while anyway, and decided that he was going to use the opportunity to go into professional podcasting and continued his morning show, but just did it on the web. And last time I talked to him, it was going really well, going better than expected. He was having great guests and having a good time. And then Tuesday of last week, he disappeared. And Friday, we found out that they found him. He'd been dead since then and took his own life. All of the things that we hear said on the occasion that somebody famous like that dies, the same kinds of things you heard from David Spade and friends of Anthony Bourdain, who were saying, obviously nobody saw this coming. We don't understand why now. Why didn't somebody call me? Why didn't somebody reach out? And all of those things just came crashing down. And I was like, I get it now. I mean, I understand what these people are going through and why you say things that seem a little dopey on the surface, because there just isn't anything to say. There aren't any words. It was a total shock. I mean, this is a guy who's 5 years younger than me. He was 43 and I'm 48. And I don't know what was going on, but you figure, it's the same thing on a smaller scale, but you talk about a guy who couldn't go anywhere in Charleston, South Carolina without being recognized and being that guy that everybody wanted to be around. And it's what we all think we want. And then somebody who has it does something like this and it doesn't make any sense. And, even at this point now, it's been 4 days since we found out about all of this, and I have no idea what the hell happened. All of the things that I think people tend to feel in this, maybe I'm just not feeling them yet, but it seems like there are a lot of people, especially with like the last two, with Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, who are really angry at them. And I think it's because they felt that. They felt that, well, that person had all of the things that I want. How could they give all of that up? And I don't feel any of that. I'm not angry at Richard for doing what he did. I don't know why he did what he did. So it really doesn't make any sense for me to be pissed at the guy. And it's not going to do him any harm at this point anyway. But it's such a strange, kind of void to try to walk around in and navigate. And especially being now, people move around a lot, and being four or five states away from where he was, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and go, what am I supposed to do with this? How, what does this mean? What does it mean to me? What does it mean to all of the people that were around him at the time? And it's a strange deal. I get why people find themselves at a loss for words when things like this happen.
Well, go back to the episode where we talked about the suicides of Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, and how more often than not, people will do the hand-wringing, the why didn't you call somebody, the anger, all of that. And you had pointed out the fact that nobody can understand, because nobody's in that person's head.
Yeah.
So you're basically talking about and taking your own, it sounded like advice at the time, you know, talking to people, because that's what we're doing. We're talking to people right. outside of our bubble. But
yeah, but this, it happens to everybody. That's the point.
To the words that you spoke.
Yeah.
It is that simple and that clear and that eloquent. It is. It doesn't need to be dissected and analyzed. You're not able to feel because you don't know what he was going through. Whatever it was, as we both talked about, if somebody is determined to do it, they're going to do it and have it done.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it where it's a cry for help is a very obvious thing versus suddenly somebody disappears and they find them deceased a few days later.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. You know, you can't drive yourself crazy trying to rationalize an already rationalized irrational act.
Yep.
Because in that person's mind, of course, they've balanced it out. They've come to that conclusion. They've crossed that threshold, and it's going to be a fait accompli.
Yep.
So that's really it. You know, it happened very recently in my kind of outer orbit where he was kind of a friend. He was a friend of my cousin. And, you know, I knew him for years and years and years. And this fellow was a guy in the community who everybody loved. You know, he was kind of like the guy except in the community. You know, everybody loved him. He ran this well-known butcher's shop in this town in New Jersey and where my cousin went to high school with him. And he was just a really good guy. And he jumped in front of a New Jersey Transit train.
Yeah.
You know, and people kept trying desperately, and I do mean desperately, because this made the papers. That's how I found out about it. And she's in Florida, so I didn't know if she knew. But, you know, in the papers it kept saying, I'd like to think that Chris was, you know, trying to help somebody out or just playing around and it was a tragic accident. And the answer is no. He leaped in front of the train because it was all caught on camera, because now in New Jersey – they put cameras everywhere so yeah. that, you know, they can prevent accidents. You know, this was something completely different. So, you know, and I honestly was at a loss for, this is the person I'm closest to in the world, my cousin. And I didn't know how to approach her and say, I don't know if you heard because you're down there in Florida, but, you know, Chris died last week. And when I called her and she said, do you know how he died? I said, the stories in the paper say that he was hit by a New Jersey Transit train. She got very quiet. She said he jumped in front of the train.
Uh-huh.
So she knew about it. So, you know, it's a case of you don't know what to do. You don't know how to react. It's the opposite of when histrionics unfortunately play a part in an emotional tidal wave. You know, it's the trying to understand and trying to not be brave in the face of something really painful like this, but you're trying to understand it where you don't go into that misplaced emotion of being angry at that person.
Yeah.
You know? You're just trying to understand it and you're trying to deal with your own grief. That's what it is. You know, look, as you and I well know, a loss is a loss is a loss. It doesn't matter by what way. You know, suicide, of course, being the most horrifically shocking, but still, there are some losses that you just have to try and figure out, how do I cope with it?
Right. And so that's kind of what we're all doing. And, you know, it's given us a chance to reconnect with some of the people from the old days and just talk to them for a little bit about this stuff, too. So everybody's doing, I guess, what they say we should do, just leaning on each other.
And on a brighter note, because you brought up Charleston, next week's show, you and I are going to talk about the new release from our friends from Charleston, A Fragile Tomorrow.
Are they back together? Good. So
they
putting
are
out
back
new music.
With a brand new record called Dig Me Out.
Fantastic. I could use something, yeah.
On Popdose at 10:30 will be the exclusive premiere of the new track.
Excellent. So we'll be on the lookout for that, and I can't wait to hear what they've been up to, because they just blew us away so much with everything that they've done up until now.
What I love about those guys, not just as people, but as musicians, is that they're true fans of music. Yep. They're not just aficionados, they're scholars. They really take the time to study everything. And they, you know, all four of them digest this stuff and then they spit it out amongst themselves and work it into their own thing. And in just the span of two records, the leaps and bounds between Be Nice, Be Careful and Make Me Over, it's staggering. It sounds like two completely different bands, but they went from the jangle, REM, Big Star, Birds Pop to suddenly getting heavy like Cheap Trick. Lo and behold, what were they listening to the most? Cheap Trick.
Cheap Trick. And I'm sure Slade was in there as well. So
just rock music. They got back into the rock of the 70s.
Yep.
You know? Some of the heaviness of the guitars, I kept thinking they had to have been indulging in a little bit of Grand Funk and Mountain, too.
Yeah, oh, for sure. So, I can't wait. That is excellent news. And we do have, unfortunately, one more, well, I say sad, at least a story that's got some kind of poignancy to it, because oddly enough, I had this argument with my producer the other day because he was the one who told me, hey, Joe Jackson just died. And I went, really? The Steppin' Out guy? He wasn't that old. So, true story. I was thinking, okay, wow.
I used that as a gag in my in a posting when he did die. On your radio, is she really going out with him?
Is she really going out with him? Yeah.
Get the time, guy. You know, no, we're talking about Michael Jackson's father. But you know what? The patriarch of the Jackson family wasn't exactly the nicest guy in the world from all reports. So you know what? He lived to what, 89?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's a nice long life. Now, one thing we definitely should bring up, because it has been the flashpoint of the insanity of this last week, even though I'm loath to go back to politics, is the announcement that Justice Kennedy is stepping down.
Right. Yeah, and the thing about that is, again, knee-jerk reaction is everybody's freaking out. And you have people on the right who are freaking out going, we're finally going to overturn Roe versus Wade. And you have people on the left who are freaking out going, oh, this is the end. Donald Trump is going to put another Scalia on the court, and this is going to be horrible for everybody. And really, I think the most important thing to do is look at history and look at how many times, and it's happened at least two noteworthy, notable times in the last half of the 20th century, where a president has put somebody on the Supreme Court that would seem to be a lapdog kind of pick, who has turned around to bite that president in the ass quite hard. So, before any nominations are made, before anybody is even talked about as being on the short list for Donald Trump's next Supreme Court pick, I think everybody just needs to take a pill.
The only thing that I have a problem with, and I want to reemphasize the fact that I'm no fan of Obama, but it just shows his shortcomings as a president that he didn't push through Merrick Garland's nomination to the Supreme Court when his name came up.
Yeah, he let McConnell just walk all over him, and it was awful.
Exactly. So, whatever the Supreme Court gets, it deserves too. Because I didn't forget about the 2000 elections. You know, the one that that Susan Sarandon helped Ralph Nader weasel his way into. But the thing is that now all of a sudden people are attacking Kennedy. And these are people on the left because of his son's dealings with Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, and that, whether or not that was why he tendered the resignation, we'll probably never know. But the thing is, it doesn't matter. It's his job. And if he wants to step down, he can step down. So, yeah, I mean, if they're going to drag his name through the mud and say, oh, he was dirty and he was in deep with Donald Trump.
He's on the left. So, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, right. If it is as they've posited, if there was some kind of shady deal going on here, it had to be going on for the last 20 years. So nobody cared until now?
Well, it seems every time that Trump does something, and I'm not defending the guy by any stretch, but it just seems a little bit too far overboard, as it's been tiresomely brought up again and again and again by me. It's just, when you hammer a point home so often, it loses its impetus. It's just pissing in the wind again.
Yeah. And, as far as the pick goes, all you have to do is look back at Watergate. And you had Richard Nixon attempting to assert executive privilege to hide evidence in Watergate. And the justice who was the chief justice on the court at the time, who told him no and who ruled against him, was Berger, who was nominated for the court by Richard Nixon 5 years earlier. So
hang on. My time to show up on the show. Welcome for another episode of One Dick's Eye View. Let me just say this much about Berger. He was cheese. And I'll leave it at that.
Well done, sir. Well played. So, yeah, it's not the end of the world. And nothing is. And that's the point. That's the one thing that I think everybody, regardless of party affiliation or whatever, needs to remember for the next however long, you know, for the next couple of years at least, is that nothing is the end of the world. We're all going to be fine.
Not if those communist bastards get into one of our...
But they won't, and that's the thing. I mean, that's
the hope.
They got one nominee.
One idiot nominee. And now some idiot up in Michigan. Let's just hope that they get stomped like narcs at a biker rally.
Yeah, it will happen eventually. So, all kinds of fun. With that said, though, I do believe we are up to our In Our Heads portion of the broadcast. Is that correct?
Drum roll, please. That would be correct, sir.
All right. We did something a couple of weeks ago that I want to dovetail off of for a minute, and I'm going to give all the credit in the world to my buddy Joe Holloman. Joe writes a column in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch under the moniker The Life Sherpa, and certainly it's a great title, but yes, Joe is just that kind of guy. And a couple of weeks ago in our head segment, we talked about summer songs. And we talked about it in a couple of different respects. Those that were just associated with the season because they became a hit during the summer and became kind of the song of the summer. And then got into that discussion about songs that are about summertime and about hot weather. And in a recent column, Joe gave his own choice. Now, he said initially the same one that you said was your choice for the top slot in terms of summer music about the season and about hot weather and all of that, The Who's Summertime Blues. But somebody else at the paper already had that pick, so he had to make a different one. And what he went with was...
Hot Fun in the Summertime?
No, you know, the Riviera's California Sun.
Well, I'm going out of west where I belong. Well, the days are short and the nights are long. Where they walk. And I won't. They twist, and I'll twist. They shimmy, and I'll shimmy. They fly, and I'll fly. Well, they're out there having fun in that warm California sun. Well, I'm going out of west, out on the coast.
When you're in Missouri, and there's no beach anywhere near you, and the closest you can get to California is listening to a song like that. And besides, the guys that were in the Rivieras were all from somewhere in Indiana. So it's not like they were really Californians anyway. But still, that song has such a cool little guitar riff to it. And between that and all of the Dick Dale stuff, I mean, surf music had that ability, I think, more than any other, you know. We talked about Jimmy Page and the fact that the blues stuff that he was playing and Beck was playing and Clapton was playing, it became this sort of self-indulgent thing. But when it came to just a nice, clean riff to carry a song, the surfers had it, man. I mean, they were the ones, the Beach Boys and the Rivieras and Jan and Dean and all of them, they all had these terrific little guitar riffs in them. And California Sun, I think, is one of the better ones. But we can talk about those a little bit and go back into the summer music as well. So what are you thinking?
Well, first of all, I prefer the Ramones version. That was the song that locked me in as a Ramones fan.
Yeah, it's a good tune.
I mean, that was a sterling choice by them.
Yep.
You know, it was just so, so good. Because I didn't even realize at first that it was a cover. Like so many songs, I was listening to the radio in the kitchen, you know, during breakfast with my parents. And, you know, California Sun came on WCBS-FM. I'm like, what the... You know?
Yep.
Not having made the connection. Did I pick Summertime Blues as my number one song for summer? Because
I think it was right up there, yeah.
I mean, it's a summer song, but I mean, if I was going to pick a number one summer song, it's going to be a summer song by Chad and Jeremy.
Okay.
That would be the definite pick. But from the perspective of a song that reminds me of summers of my life, definitely is reminiscing by the Little River Band. That's the one that I think I'm most cognizant of because I was 14 when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're in that stage where you're just starting to find girls a lot more interesting than before.
Yeah.
You know, you're suddenly going to parties now that you've graduated junior high school, you know. So that's that always equates with a really great memory. But, you know, like I said, songs like Black Water and Help Me and – you know, stuff from the 70s, you know, Philadelphia Freedom and, you know, all those songs that remind me of the summertime,
yeah,
being in the car in summertime. So I have to say, though, for my number one summer song of all summer songs, it probably would be Chad and Jeremy. Because it's such a simple song and it's such a simple lyric, but there's such depth and poetry in that lyric. It's such a meaningful and poignant song. You can't help but, frankly, get a chill and maybe even a tear when you hear it. The melody is just staggeringly beautiful, too.
You know, the warm weather stuff is funny because when I was a kid, at the same time that I was listening to songs like Let 'Em In, which was my big summer song in 1975, I think it was, my dad was then and still is a big fan of Jimmy Buffett. So I got a healthy dose of Buffett riding around in Dad's car with him, which is, I know. It's cheesy, whatever. But the fact is, there were a couple of songs, and unfortunately, the ones that made it to the radio, Come Monday, I hate that song. I've always hated that song, and it's the only one every time somebody says, we got some Jimmy Buffett coming up around the corner, it's always freaking Come Monday. So
Margaritaville, because God knows they played that to death.
Yes, they did. And thankfully, that was a fairly short death because it only took a couple of weeks and it was gone. But yeah, in those couple of weeks, couldn't get away from it. But the one that I always went back to, actually, there were two. One was Cowboy in the Jungle. And it's such a great piece of writing that, you know, again, it was one of the good Buffett songs, so nobody ever played it on the radio. And the other one was Manana.
She said, I can't go back to America soon. So goddamn cold, it's gonna snow until June. Yeah, they're freezing up in Buffalo, stuck in their cars, and I'm lying here, need the sun and the stars.
And that was pretty much my dad's mantra from 1975 on through about 1980 when we finally got out of there.
I can't add anything to that because I look at Parrot Heads, and all I hear in my head is the same thing over and over again. This line from a song called Yuppie Drone.
Yep.
Me and my lady person friend drinking Bartles and James wine coolers, listening to Jimmy Buffett while we drive around in my BMW. It's done in a monotone robotic way. It's brilliant.
Yeah, and that is, by the way, not who my dad is, but yeah, I know I've been to those concerts, and there's a lot of those guys out there. I will say this though, in the same respect that we were talking about Mr. Rogers a little bit earlier, and the great thing about him that really comes through in that movie is the authenticity of him. And that it was never an act. It was never a put on. I mean, the things that were important to him as the character were just things that were important to him. And there's something to be said for that. You can be dorky and you can be, you know, square and out of step with pop culture and still be authentic. And that's what he was. And in that same way, the guy who has been Jimmy Buffett's lead guitar player for the last, 30 years or something like that, Peter Mayer, is a good friend of mine. And he is one of those people. He does these charity shows every Christmas here in St. Louis, and is always, you know, doing something. Everything that he does has some kind of charity tied to it.
It has meaning and value.
Right. And that's the thing, is there are things that he handpicked because they really do have meaning to him. He's one of those people you look at and go, you know, nobody that good looking is really that good a person. It just doesn't happen. And as far as I know, it's only happened once, and it's Peter Mayer. He really is that guy. So I give Buffett a lot of leeway because of Peter.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have some friends who are just diehard Buffett fans, and
sure,
I'll never understand it, but at the same time, they could never understand why I was an REM fan.
There you go. I happen to be both, so.
The thing about summer songs, it is difficult because also songs that are about summer don't always seem to be released during the summertime. And then there are songs from the summertime or about summertime that just irk the bejesus out of you. So when you hear the word, it starts to, if you're not clicking into the positive mindset, you're hearing, you know, things in the back of your head like that awful Summertime, Summertime, Some Summertime song.
Right, or Saturday in the Park by Chicago.
Oh, anything by Chicago makes me just automatically want to projectile vomit. I'm sorry. That's a band I have never liked nor found any redeeming qualities about. That is schlock rock at its absolute worst.
Right, and then they made the ultimate horrible move in rock and roll history. They took a kind of a pablum, meaningless product to begin with, and then made Peter Cetera sing lead over it. Ugh.
Which crappy piece of pablum do you mean?
All of them, anything Cetera sang. And I guess he became the lead singer on what, Chicago 14?
Whenever it was that Terry Kath died.
Or no, yeah, Chicago 7 was the big one that he was on that had all of the hits on it in 1981, I think. So yeah, maybe it was Chicago 5 he became lead on. Whatever it was just a bad mistake. And all of that, the one song that was the theme song to the movie Summer Lovers in 1981.
Ooh.
Miserable, yeah. Oh, just terrible.
Well, I mean, Peter Cetera's solo stuff just made me want to blow my brains out. God, sounds like Hard Habit to Break. No, yours is a hard neck to break.
Yep.
You know, I mean, their songs are also so stupid, the early ones. What the hell does 25 or 6 to 4 mean?
It's the time on the clock. I actually got that answer from one of the guys in the band. It was 3, whatever that ends up being, 3:37 in the morning, or 3:35 in the morning, which is 25 to 4. So it's 25 or 6 to 4. It's a roundabout way of saying it's about 25 to 4. I know, it's that dumb. It really is.
That's stupid. That's stupid. And they suck. I'm sorry. Chicago are one of those bands. There's nothing you can ever say that would make me like them. They are just those groups. Just like I don't like REO Speedwagon. I don't like Styx, you know, and I don't like Journey. You know, there's just though there are some bands I can't find anything redeeming about. You know, I like Kansas. I don't care for Boston, frankly.
Yeah, corporate rock. Eesh.
Yeah, corporate rock pretty much. So, but I never saw Kansas as being corporate rock.
No, I mean Boston. Yeah,
Boston definitely is corporate rock. You know, but that was the pride of Epic Records. So you know, it's really hard with these summer songs. Plus, I would like to go back and give an even more, you know, cogent kind of answer, because I'm picking out the things that I can remember from those summers as a child.
Right.
You know, whether it was Let 'Em In one summer, Listen to What the Man Said the previous summer, there are songs that I'm probably forgetting, like when we initially did this and I'd forgotten of all things reminiscing.
Yeah. Well, let's go back into the surf music then for just a minute, because, you know, outside of the Beach Boys, it seemed like there were just that there were a bunch of one-hit wonders. There were songs by, you know, the Ventures and the Surfaris and the Rivieras and a million other bands that all had, you know, that same quality about them. And it makes sense that they did, because most of them were recorded by the Wrecking Crew anyway. So yeah, of course they all kind of sounded the same. The surf sound was invented by those guys, and Dick Dale playing lead guitar. So are there any that stand out to you from those one-hit wonder surf tunes?
Well, I can't qualify the Ventures as one-hit wonders, but of course, Walk Don't Run is one of the greatest songs of all time.
Definitely.
And I definitely would pick their version of Wipeout over the Safaris version.
Also true.
The Shantays, would you consider them surf? I mean, since Pipeline is...
Pipeline, yeah, definitely.
...sounding thing.
Yep.
You know, when I was a kid, I liked Jan and Dean, but listening now, they were kind of dire. You know, it seems like Jan Berry would take a theme and just run it into the ground. After Surf City, it became Drag City, and then became like Folk City.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, just he was a one-trick pony, unfortunately. Great ideas, never got to really bring them to fruition. Yeah, they had some cool songs. Surf City is a classic. Jenny Lee and Baby Talk, those are their first two records.
Mm-hmm.
Those are classics. Dead Man's Curve is a good song. That's ironic. Yeah, beyond that, they really didn't have much to offer. Even though they're the ones who did the original version of Bucket Tea, but the Who did it better. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, well, what, you know, again, going back to the covers with Summertime Blues, what didn't the Who cover better?
Those two James Brown songs on My Generation, they should never have done.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Never touched Please, Please, Please. Their version of Heatwave I could have lived without, definitely. Don't love their version of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I do like, however, their interpretation of In the Hall of the Mountain King. That and doing another version of My Generation and tagging Pomp and Circumstance on at the end of it.
Oh, man. Well,
doing the whole Land of Hope and Glory routine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that took a little bit of, you know, that's the sense of humor of that band.
Yeah.
You know, there's that extended version of Odds and Sods that has a lot of the unreleased stuff, and or previously unreleased stuff, like the studio version of Summertime Blues. They should have never, they as much as they loved Motown, they shouldn't have been playing Motown stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Baby Don't You Do It, Leaving Here, the Birds with an I did a better version of Leaving Here. If you're going to, you know, have somebody doing soul music, just leave it in the hands of Steve Marriott. You're going to hurt yourself otherwise.
You're going to hurt yourself, or you'll hurt your soul. Brilliant. Well, you know, next time around, who knows what's going to happen. But as you said, we've got new music to talk about next time.
Yes, we do. And I'm sure we're only at Monday. It's a holiday week, but God knows there's going to be plenty of news and plenty for us to mull over and chew on and hopefully have a laugh with, because it just seems like things are getting harder and harder to try and find a laugh around. And a lot of people will ascribe it to the fact that we're not in Mercury retrograde, but it's like Saturn and some of the other planets are, and it won't end until August. So it all depends on what your take on things is. Just hopefully you find, as per usual, which is our hope and desire, that there's something in this show that you liked, that you laughed at, that you agree with, that you enjoyed. We may have pissed you off a little bit, but we never go out of our way to be obnoxious provocateurs. And I can't emphasize that enough, because that's what we're surrounded by right now. Wherever you go, people in the street, people on stupid social media, you know, everybody has a bigger dick than you because they know better. You know, it's on TV. The media is in fact, you know, chronically lying or swaying things one way or the other. Just go with the flow right now, because it's the only way to keep a sane point of view on things.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I want to know one thing. If they all know so much better than me, why can't they spell?
I don't even want to approach that. Oh, John, that is a tirade. That tirade would last an entire show length. God forbid any of these retards use spell check.
Right. Or had, you know, any grammar at all.
They write like less than fifth grade remedials.
Yeah.
Which is what most of them aspire to be. But you know, they're all communists. And all commies need to do is go out and dig ditches.
There you go. Well, do me a favor. Don't blow any fingers off over the next couple of days. And have yourself a wonderful 4th of July, Rob Ross. And we'll get together, talk some new music, and who knows what else next time.
You do the same. Be safe. Have fun. Have a great holiday. Everybody, let's all make America great again, especially with me at the helm. Take care. And if the floodwaters don't rise, we'll see you next week.